Today we are going to continue in Acts chapter 15, and this is the meeting that Paul and Barnabas and others that came down with him, Silas is mentioned, and then this Barsabbas, that I'm not sure who he is. I don't know that he's ever mentioned again. But anyway, he also, or at least he goes back with them, back to Antioch after this meeting. But there's five parts, five divisions in this meeting that happens. First, Paul and Barnabas start telling of all of the accounts of what happened on their first missionary journey as they went through Cyprus and went through the Galatian region here in Asia Minor. And as they were telling that, then they get rudely interrupted by these Pharisees who start their false teaching all over again that they had already spread at Antioch and to this Galatian region that you have to be circumcised and follow the law of Moses before you can become a Christian. Okay, so that's the second division, was this rude interruption of the Pharisees. Then the third part is Peter then gives an address to let them know that and remind them what they already knew, the account from Acts chapter 10, when God had sent an angel to Caesarea to Cornelius and told him to send men and send for Peter, who was staying at Joppa, some about 30 miles south of Caesarea on the coast there of the Mediterranean Sea. And so then Peter went to Caesarea, went to Cornelius's house, and then they were able to prophesy but to speak in languages that they had not learned, which then told Peter that God is behind all of this, and so we cannot withhold them from being baptized and becoming Christians, because God has authorized them to by the miracle of them speaking in tongues. Okay, so he was reminding them of that. So that quietened the crowd. Then that allowed Paul and Barnabas to finish telling about the miracles that God performed through them in Cyprus and the Galatian regions and all that happened. They got to finish that account. And then finally, the fifth part of this meeting is James gives an address quoting from the prophet Amos and telling them and reminding what they already knew, that God always had in his mind that he was going to allow the Gentiles to be part of the kingdom, of his kingdom. And that even preceded the Mosaic Age and the Law of Moses. The Gentiles were never responsible and obligated to follow the Law of Moses. And so it was God's plan from the beginning that the Gentiles were never going to be required to follow the law of Moses to be part of his kingdom. And then James has in mind at the end and how this address is ended is just to remind the Gentiles of four things to abstain from, and mostly it's blood and things that are sacrificed to idols. To abstain from things polluted by idols, sexual immorality, and refrain from things that are animals that are strangled. So don't eat animals that were strangled and not drained of their blood. And and then refrain from the blood. So anyway, so that how they end this meeting is they decide to write a letter that then Paul and Barnabas and Silas and this Barsabbas, Judas Barsabbas, take back to Antioch, and then that letter is distributed and spread throughout Antioch, and then I'm assuming, and I think Kaufman even thought so, then it would be spread all over Asia Minor, and who knows, I guess far and wide, but definitely to this Galatian area. And anyway, that's how this meeting was conducted, and from beginning to end. Any questions or comments? Well, these even preceded, of course, it preceded Christianity, and it preceded even the law of Moses. This goes, these four things to abstain from went back to the patriarchal age, who the Gentiles were always under. They were supposed to be, even, of course, for the 1,500 years that the Jews were under the law of Moses, the Gentiles were supposed to continue the patriarchal age and the same laws that God had put down, you know, for Adam, for Seth, for Noah, for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for all of that. And then with Moses, when they were in Egyptian captivity, that's when God took just the Israelites aside and placed them under just the law of Moses. But the Gentiles were still supposed to be following the laws of the patriarchal age that are outlined in Genesis. And I'm going to say we probably don't have all of the laws that were placed down on them, but anyway, several are stated, and we can just see what they abided by, the righteous ones, and we can know, okay, that's part of the patriarchal age. But it wasn't a written law. It's just like the writer of Hebrews said that back in the before times, in the old, I think it was like stated in the before times, but it was in the times of old, God gave the law straight to the patriarchs, the fathers of the family, and the leaders, male leaders of those families. He gave the law straight to them, and then they were supposed to then teach all of their big extended families. And but anyway, and then the writer of Hebrews said, but in more recent times, now God's law has come through His Son, the Messiah. So that's how the book of Hebrews starts out. But anyway, so yes, these were always supposed to have been followed. And, you know, these Gentiles have been, well, for millennia, you know, since the flood, mostly, but definitely centuries before. You know, they went through, in this region, they were ruled by the Medo-Persians, and then by the Greeks, and then, at this point in time, by the Romans. All of them were pagan and had false gods that they were all confused with, mostly Greek and then Roman gods. And so, this was just a reminder. And maybe not necessarily as much of a reminder, but just initial teaching, which I'm going to say very likely the ones that Paul taught, Paul and Barnabas, as they went on the first missionary journey, all this was probably mentioned. So it would probably be more of a reminder. But anyway, this is what this was James's idea. Now, this idea of James was a good idea. Other plans that he had were not. But this one was to his credit here. That he did well, but no, this is something that they should have always been following to be righteous. The righteous people would have always been doing this, and so, it's in verse 20. They said that we decided that we will write to them to abstain from things polluted by idols, from sexual immorality, from things strangled, and from blood. Those are the four things that they laid down to remind these Gentiles who have become Christians. You are not required by God to follow the law of Moses, to become a Jewish proselyte in order to become a Christian. And so we are not going to bind that on you, but we're reminding you that you should you would be wise, and to be righteous, you'll abstain from these four things. That's exactly what they were. Kaufman does bring that out when we get to that. Yes. Yes, so this was a reminder, because many of these were heavily steeped in Now, some, and I don't know about majority, but anyway, a good number, I'll say, were Jewish proselytes. So they already had come out. But these ones that maybe hadn't been around the Jews, and they were just straight pagan, and they heard the good news of the gospel for the first time, and being able to enter God's kingdom, they became Christians. Okay, you're coming straight out of paganism and idolatry. Here are four things that you need to be aware of to abstain from, that you've probably known all your lives in generation after generation. But this is something that's going to have to be a cold, hard stop. And so that's what got spread around first to Antioch. And I don't know that it's mentioned spread anywhere else, but you know how all these letters, they all got copied and got spread throughout everywhere. And so I'm assuming this letter did too. Yes. Okay, so we'll start here with verse 4 of Acts chapter 15. And when they had come to Jerusalem, they were received by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they reported all things that God had done with them. So here, this is when Paul and Barnabas and the Silas and whoever else came down with him, Luke says, and others. Then they start to tell initially about this their missionary journey and all the things that God had done through them. And Kaufman said, the journey from Antioch to Jerusalem was about 300 miles in length. So from here in Antioch down to Jerusalem, this is 300 miles. So this was a significant area to travel. This wasn't any minor afterthought decision to travel 300 miles. And of course, if you travel 300 miles, you've got 300 miles to go back. So they committed to a 600-mile round trip to start this, which now God is the one that sent Paul down here. So it didn't matter what Paul was going, regardless of any other thing, because God sent him here. So, but anyway, and then these other men decided to commit to this 600-mile round trip with him. But Paul and Barnabas were not strangers to the Christians at Jerusalem. One can only imagine the enthusiasm shown by these two returning missionaries for the thrilling work they had just completed among the Gentiles, and for the joy it must have stirred in the hearts of their audience, with a few exceptions. And these few exceptions are mentioned here in verse 5 now. But some of the sect of the Pharisees who believed rose up, saying, it is necessary to circumcise them and to command them to keep the law of Moses. And Kaufman said, here is identified the seed of the mischief. In Acts 6, verse 7, which we've looked at, it's probably been about a month ago or so now, but and we covered Acts 6, verse 7, back where the priest, many of the priests became Christians, is what Luke recorded. And Kaufman is stating here, many of those priests were Pharisees, if not nearly all of them. And he thinks that is this insidious group agency that that is spreading this false teaching that they had to become basically Jewish proselytes before they could become Christians. But he said in Acts 6, verse 7, Luke related how a great company of the priests believed, became Christians, many of whom no doubt were Pharisees. The Pharisees had dealt the Lord's kingdom misery from the beginning, but apparently even some of this most hostile group could not resist the power of the gospel. One might suspect that they hoped to run their heresy roughshod over the Apostle Paul. If that was what they had hoped for, they had vastly underestimated their opponent. Their love of the procedures and ceremonies of Judaism had been brought with them into the congregation, and it may be assumed that for some considerable time, they had been working to graft their own system into Christianity. Not only had they corrupted most of the congregation in Jerusalem, but the congregations in Galatia had been visited and corrupted sufficiently to call forth Paul's vehement letter to the Galatians. The representatives they sent down to Antioch probably expected a quick victory there also at Antioch. But instead of a victory, they suddenly confronted the fearless Paul, who challenged them, defeated them, and proceeded to Jerusalem, where he reversed the victory they had already won there in Jerusalem. And then Kaufman makes a pretty bold statement here, a strong statement. Aside from Christ himself, Christianity owes more to Paul than to any other. Any questions or comments on this? We'll pause there, and after we sing, we'll pick up with verse 6.